leave it on two and call it good because. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Wednesday, April 5th, 2017. At least I know I'm going to get the date right. And we are today having a public hearing on Senate Bill 5526, Department of Human Services, related to self-sufficiency, child welfare, and program design services, which we haven't actually heard about.
Yeah, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, and a question did come up yesterday. So we ended up having to shift the public testimony day. Normally, we'd have heard from all the centralized programs as well prior to today. So you may hear some testimony about the parts of the department we haven't actually had a presentation on yet, but we can always play catch up later if we need to on that.
And as usual, the way we're going to work this is we're going to try to give people notice, so I'll be calling up three people and letting you know who the three people are on deck. We are, for the moment, still going to limit it to 2 minutes per person, and that way we might actually get through the whole list, which would be great. If we have a little extra time at the end, we can always add stuff on, but I know there's a whole other list over there somewhere. So anything else, Ms. Barley, before we get started? Great. So we're going to start with Kevin Frazier, Valentin Golchuk, and Marichka Besbarato. I hope I got that one right. And next up, we're going to have a food bank panel on Philip Kennedy Wong, Ryan McCambridge, Sheila O'Keefe, and Janice Cook. So the first three are up.
Is it all right if we bring a chair up for?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Bring a chair because we're going to need four for some of the panels. Please do. Absolutely. So you should all come up simultaneously. Please come up. That's great. Thank you so much. And I understand we have an interpreter for at least one of our panel members,
yes,
which is great. Welcome. Thank you for being here with us. We want to be sure we're accessible to everybody. So please, whoever comes up, as soon as you get seated, go ahead and start.
All right.
Thanks.
Co-Chair Steiner, Hayward, and Rayfield, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Frazier. Happy birthday, Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the TANF Alliance. The Alliance works with partners such as Children First for Oregon, the Oregon Food Bank, the Oregon Task Force, Hunger Task Force, excuse me, the Human Services Coalition, and the Urban League of Portland to advance policies that provide TANF recipients with the support they need to thrive at home and in the job market. TANF is a family crisis intervention program, successful only if the right policies and resources are in place. More Oregonians rely on TANF for their basic needs than live in West Lynn, Woodburn, Roseburg, Ashland, or Pendleton. A total of 26,766 single or two-parent families met the TANF eligibility criteria in 2015. For these families, TANF is not just a safety net, it's a lifesaver. Today, you'll hear from program recipients about the importance of TANF, and if you have a need for any additional information from the TANF Alliance, you'll be able to access testimony that we submitted to OLIS, and of course, we're happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Please.
Morning. My name is Marichka, and I am here today to urge.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you. Could you be kind enough to give your last name as well for the record?
Moisuk.
Thank you so much.
From what you have.
That's great.
I am here today to urge the legislature to continue funding temporary assistance for needy families at its current level, which helps support my family of three. I am a single mother of two. I have a son, he's six, and I have a daughter, she's one and a half. I'm recently divorced. I was for 11 years in a very abusive marriage, and I didn't have anywhere to go. I didn't have anybody to help me, and I had to take it as a soldier. So after 11 years, I just had enough. So I went to welfare, and they told me not to worry. They will help me with food and some cash for diapers because I have a one-year-old. And so with that, because of TANF, it gave me courage to make that step out of abusive relationship, marriage. And so I took my kids and I left. And it was my only hope for a long time, 8 months. That was the only support that I had. That little cash, even though it's not enough for my expenses, but it provided diapers, clothes, wipes, all the necessary things for my kids, which I wouldn't be able to do if I was on my own. I would have to stay in that marriage if it wasn't for Tana and food stamps. I'm looking for a job, but it is hard for me right now because I've been a stay-at-home mom for 6 years, and I didn't have any savings or job or anything. And because of TANF, I had courage, and that was my hope, and I stepped out, and I'm so much better with my kids today. And so I am asking you not to cut on TANF.
Thank you so much. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I do want to make sure. And thank you so much for your bravery in taking care of yourself and your children and reaching out for the help you needed and for coming to talk to us today. We really appreciate it. Thank you. Please.
Меня зовут Оксана Сухотерина. Сейчас я живу в Портленде, а раньше жила в России.
My name is Oksana Sukhatera. I currently live in Portland, but I used to live in Russia.
У меня есть муж, маленький ребенок. Это сын, ему год.
I have a husband and a child who's one year old.
Программа ТАНФ важна для тех, кто начинает жизнь с нуля. Я плохо знаю английский и не могу найти работу.
The TANF assistance is very important for those who begin life from scratch in another country. I have been in the U.S. only for 3 months. I don't know English well and I still cannot find a job.
Также не с кем оставить ребенка, а нянечки не хотят сидеть с детьми, потому что им мало выплачивают.
I do not have anyone to babysit my child because it's difficult to find babysitters who are willing to stay with the child for such low money.
Мы даже не можем оплатить квартиру. Денег хватает только на половину цены за аренду. Занимаем деньги, чтобы нас не выгнали.
We don't have enough finances to cover the rent, some of the expenses we loan for, so we wouldn't have to be homeless.
Не говоря уже за коммунальные услуги, у нас ребенок, и в квартире должно быть тепло. Также много расходов на памперсы, салфетки, одежду и так далее.
Also, there's finances needs for child diapers, wipes, and other utility bills.
Программа ТАНФ необходима как начальная ступенька к обеспечению счастливого будущего для нас и наших детей, чтобы.
The TANF assistance is essential first step towards self-sufficiency for a good future for our family and our children.
Не урезайте ТАНФ, пусть за это платят корпорации.
Please don't cut off the TANF funding. Give the critical assistance for families in need. And I hope you support finding revenue from those who can afford it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming to share your story. And then, so we've got coming up Philip Kennedy Wong, Ryan McCambridge, Sheila O'Keefe, and Janice Cook. And Mr. Mullen, were you supposed to be on this panel as well? I'll come on the next one. Okay, so after that, Mr. Mullen, Nikki Terziev, Sybil Hepp, and Melissa Unger will be next on deck. Thank you. And whoever gets up here first, just rock and roll. We want to make sure everybody has as much time as possible.
Madam Chair, members of the committee for record, Philip Kennedy Wong. I will not actually be speaking a whole lot. I'm just here to actually introduce this panel. So. I'm privileged to sort of give you first an overview of the Oregon Food Bank Network, just in terms of the fact that we are essentially the backbone to the food distribution system in the state of Oregon when it comes to hunger, but also for natural disaster planning. So we have 20 regional food banks in the state that provides food to small agencies across the state. And as many of you know, the hunger rate has spiked in Oregon, the highest in the nation. And here to share their perspective is Ryan McCambridge, who runs the regional food bank, and Lynn Benton, food chair. And with them is Janice Cook with the South Benton Food Bank, and also Sheila O'Keefe with the South Corvallis Food Bank to share perspectives from the local level.
Thank you. Please.
My name is Ryan McCambridge. I'm the director of Lynn Benton Food Share. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you about the Oregon Hunger Response Fund and food banking generally in the state. I usually start off public testimony or presentations with one number. And so because we're also in Corvallis in Beaver Nation, 47,199. That's the number of emergency food boxes that Lynn Benton Food Share distributed in two counties. That also is greater than the seating capacity of Reser Stadium by about 2,000. So just imagine that every seat in Reser Stadium is filled with an emergency food box, and you still have 2,000 food boxes on the outside of the stadium. So we are at a higher rate of distribution than we were at the height of the financial crisis in 2008-2009. Housing plays a significant role, especially in the Benton County Corvallis area. And one thing to understand about food is that food is sort of the loss leader. Food represents a basic need for folks, but the food pantry system is acting more and more like a community center where relationships are being built between folks that care about low-income individuals and families, but also a place where low-income individuals and families can feel safe, feel that they have a place, and also give a sense that where they can give back to the community. We also are encouraging our agencies to become where food is accessed, but also where we can provide other social services at the same time. So really efficiently delivering service. In our case, we also run a mobile pantry at an elementary school in Corvallis. So we provide food, great quality food, I might say. But in addition to that, we have energy assistance available at that location. We have Knights of Columbus providing winter coats during the season. So we're really trying to maximize the efficiency of that service.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Janice Cook, and I'm the South Benton Food Pantry Program Manager. And I would like to speak a little more, too, about the close relationships that we have in our area. I serve rural Benton County, particularly in the Monroe School District, and I have served over 1,800 families this last year in providing really great quality food from Lynn Benton Food Share. We also have associations with partnerships with other agencies that come down and provide services through Benton County Health Services, Community Services Consortium, Willamette Neighborhood Housing is looking at partnering with us in areas to find out ways to help the homeless. We have in the Monroe School District, we have 10% of our teens are homeless. They're couch surfing and they're coming to get food from our agency. 10% of our population is also homeless in as far as families goes. And we also have a growing number of people that are housing insecure in other ways due to the high cost of rent or not being able to find housing. But food issue is essential. And so when they come to our pantry, we know that they have a need. Sometimes it's more than one need. And so I'm here there to listen to their what is going on. In particular, I have a family that has been coming to our food pantry for over 10 years, and they are now experiencing a divorce, and they are being not feeling comfortable in their what's going on. And so when they come to our food pantry, they feel safe. They feel able to talk to the volunteers or myself, and they're able to get good quality food for their whole family. And it's just essential to be able to provide these needs and be an ear for them and be on the ground and be able to give them referrals or give them an ear to listen to. And thank you very much, and I appreciate your opportunity to speak to you.
Thank you for coming today. Please.
Good Good morning. My name is Sheila O'Keefe, and I'm executive director of the South Corvallis Food Bank. We provide service to everyone in South and downtown Corvallis. We've seen about a 10% increase in demand in the last year. We're currently serving around 325 households, about 1,100 individuals every month. About 40% of those clients are children, and about 11.5% are homeless individuals, which are we've seen a definite increase in homelessness in the last few years, I think because of the cost of housing in Corvallis, which has gotten astronomical. As well as providing, you know, a food box with the basics, staples and all, we do try and help our clients develop nutritional skills and move towards food self-sufficiency. Two specific ways I'd like to highlight that we do that is in the spring. We've just started in the last couple of weeks. We distribute plant starts to our clients, as a lot of them do have a small garden or patio area where they can grow some of their own food. So that is good both in that they can be growing their own food, and if they can get their kids involved, you can get a kid to eat a tomato. It's grown. The kid has grown more than you can get them to eat one that they bought at the store. So we like to do that. And we last year I had one woman client who was very excited in the spring. She coming in, you know, each week as the season went on, we'd have different types of plant starts. And she would get the different ones. She was all excited about her garden, and she'd tell me how things were growing. And then in August, she came in with a bag full of tomatoes to donate to us to distribute to the other clients. So that's a way they not only can move to self-sufficiency, but feel like they're giving back to us. Now, this spring, we're benefiting directly from a program that is actually coming from the Oregon Hunger Funds. It's a pilot program that Lynn Benton Food Chair is running, where we have a nutrition educator coming in every Monday during our opening, and she does a food cooking demo and then provides the samples to the clients as they wait to get served to get their food. And so that is educating them on how to do things like cooking with dried beans that not everyone necessarily knows. And so that's not only helping them use the foods we're providing them this week, but it's also giving them the skills going forward to feed their families well on low-cost, high nutritional value things like dried beans. So I hope you'll continue to fund the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And while we have our next panel coming up, which is John Mullen, Nikki Terziev, although I don't see Nikki in the room. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I forgot to mention that we did submit a testimony on OLA's outlines like our request.
Thank you very much. Sybil Hebb and Melissa Unger. I will comment that I had the privilege of speaking on Sunday to a group of Cub Scouts earning their Arrow of Light Award, and the Scoutmaster was there because they're about to transition to Boy Scouts as the director of the St. Anthony's Food Bank in Tigard, and he was talking, as did the gentleman from Lynn Benton, about the value of including a range of services there, which I think is exactly the model we're trying to promote. So, please.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. I've submitted testimony, so I'm going to be very brief in my comments, but just to say that, consistent with our mission, we were one of the founders of the TANF Alliance and support that work. I want to just very quickly give some context. The stories that you heard on the first panel and you'll hear later today are the really important ones. But to set some historical context, and this is in my testimony, we've come from a program, the Aid to Family with Dependent Children program, that was we preceded TANF, the passage of so-called welfare reform in 1996 led to the TANF program. And it wasn't until the 2007 session that we really grappled with what Oregon's TANF program should look like. Then freshman Representative Tina Kotek and Representative Ron Maurer had a work group that I had the privilege of being a part of. And we made some investments in the program, but as you remember from history, from 2007, we went fairly quickly into a recession in 2008, and we had to make dramatic reductions to the TANF program. We kept at it all during the recession, making sure that we were preserving benefits, even though a lot of the services went away. And then in the 15th session, you all passed House Bill 3535, which does a really important thing. It reinvests the caseload savings, because now that the economy is improving, we're doing better with reductions in the caseload, but we want to make sure that we overcome the barriers that people have to becoming self-sufficient. So really support this approach. And as you think about the decisions that you have to make at this point in time in the session, we hope that there won't be any pullback from TANF. We also talk a little bit in my testimony about the grant amount, which I won't go into today. I know others will mention it, but that grant hasn't been increased, the benefit that the participants get since 1991. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. Ms. Hebb.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center, next to my colleague here, speaking today just briefly on a couple of programs from the perspective of survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. And so I'm also speaking today on behalf of the Oregon Alliance to End Violence Against Women. And as you know, domestic and sexual violence are a public health as well as a public safety issue. And what we see from the Law Center's perspective is that these dynamics really trap people in poverty and in unsafe situations, and that's bad for them and bad for their children. Obviously, it's also bad for our communities and for the state of Oregon. And so we're committed to finding ways to help people break that cycle and to get safe and move on in a way that provides opportunity for their children and for their families. And the safety net that is funded through the Department of Human Services is critical. Employment-related daycare, TANF, SNAP benefits, those are programs. If those are not available for people when they are taking that brave and very dangerous step of leaving a violent situation, that people face homelessness or feel they have no choice but to stay in an unsafe situation. So the Department of Human Services benefits and programs, that safety net is really critical to people being able to take safe steps. Two programs I particularly wanted to address, which I believe make Oregon very well-situated and which are sort of creatively and specifically tailored to meet the needs of survivors. One is the Temporary Assistance to Domestic Violence Survivor Program. That's something that provides immediate assistance. If a person needs to get out and get safe but doesn't have money for a bus ticket, doesn't have money for a motel to keep off the streets that night, that's a program that can step in. It saves lives. Also, the Co-located Domestic Violence Advocacy Program helps if a child is referred to the child welfare system because of violence in the home. That victim parent needs help getting safe, and the co-located advocate program makes sure that that person who's a victim has access to informed services who can help her get to the courthouse to get a restraining order, who can help her find the ways that she needs to access services. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Mike Marshall on behalf of the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. I simply want to, we submitted written testimony. I want to echo what Sybil just said and just really draw focus to TADVS, Temporary Assistance for Domestic Violence Survivors. The program was established in 1997. It's a $1,200 emergency grant that can be spent over 90 days. That amount has not changed since 1997. And initially, it was really very useful in terms of finding alternative housing, a first and last month's rent, or a plane ticket, or plane tickets for the family, or whatever the case may be. Obviously, just housing alone in Oregon has changed dramatically since then. And what I think we've discovered is that applications for the program have actually gone down because the $1,200 cannot be spent in the 90-day period anymore. Number one, the $1,200 simply is not enough to find alternative housing, and 90 days is not enough time. Representative Peluso's introduced a bill, and we really want to advocate for an increase in the grant size from $1,200 to $3,000 so that the efficacy of the program, the impact of the program, the purpose of the program can be restored, because in many ways it's been diminished over the years. And also that the time frame in which the survivor can use that grant money extended from 90 days to 180 days so that it's, again, much more effective. Again, we submitted testimony. Appreciate your attention.
Thank you so much. Ms. Unger, come on up.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify. My name is Melissa Unger, and I am the political director for SEIU Local 503. And I just quickly wanted to touch on the program, employment-related daycare program. We represent over 4,000 child care providers in the state of Oregon who serve kids through this program. And there was a big investment in ERDC last session, but still there's over 7,000 people on the waiting list. And for so many families, it is the only chance that someone can be able to go get a job with young children. And just to give you a personal note on that, I have 2 children in daycare in Portland. They go 3 days a week, and I pay $1,750 a month for those 2 kids to go to 3 days of daycare. I have no idea how anyone in any low-wage job would ever be able to afford that. And I think it's a really important program to make sure that people have access to work so that they can actually get back on their feet and be able to provide for their family and grow to be able to provide for their family. I think that, and even though 7,000 people are on the waiting list, the program only serves 16% of eligible people. And so the program is, while critical and the investments have been good, there's still so much more to do. And on the back end, I think the last thing to mention is just, even in all of that, we still have child care providers who make minimum wage or $12 an hour, but they do most of the most important work in our, in our society by taking care of our children. And the need to have quality child care providers when they care for kids at the very beginning of their lives is so important. And to know that even though I believe that a daycare like mine who takes ERDC is doing all they can to provide for child care providers, there's no way that they can pay more than $14 an hour or $13 an hour and that families can afford it. And we're really in this bind on child care. So this program is critical for the people it serves and it needs to continue to serve more people. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. I forgot to announce the on-deck people, but we're doing okay on time. So Janet Ahrens, Francis Maher, hope I read that correctly, and Alexandra Sergeyeva. You're next up and on deck. We've got Doug Riggs, Brittany Hope, and Matt Newell Ching. Thank you. I'm missing somebody potentially. No, you're coming. Good. Lovely. Whoever, if you don't have testimony, please sit down and get started. We're all good. We're glad to have you here with us.
Thank you.
Dear committee, my name is Alexandra Sergeyeva, and I am a caseworker for DHS Child Welfare, Portland, Oregon. I'm here to testify in support for the budget for DHS Child Welfare. I would like to give you a sense of what my day looks like. Most days I spend in the field. I talk to families, children, and other people involved in child life. My job is to assess child safety. I work with family members, community partners to help families to improve their life circumstances and keep their children safe. On some days, I do all of these things, plus I write a court report, I arrange visitations between children, parents, siblings, and I provide transportation. Wherever time I have left, I spend to get caught up on overdue assessments. In my office, every 3 days we get a case. Sometimes we're busier and we get 2 to 3 cases a day. We don't have enough people, we don't have enough permanency workers and SSA. That means if frontline workers like myself, we get the job done. We support parents, facilitate visits between siblings, children, and their families. And we don't have capacity to do at the extent needed. 2 visits a month for siblings, this is not enough. And it's not sustainable for us. There is not enough hours in a day to finish my job. It's a constant feeling of being overwhelmed and exhausted. And this has impact on my families. Very often we become impatient with families. They need some more support right now. And what we are asking is to increase investments in DHS child welfare staff and have fully staffed at 100%. We would like to see increase in rates for our foster parents and BRS placement. We cannot fix the system without having good and sustainable long-term homes for our children. We need to invest in our future, and children is our future. We would like to see funding to support legal representation for caseworkers during the proceedings. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for coming and for the work that you do. Really appreciate it. Please.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Francis Maher. I'm the executive director at St. Mary's Home for Boys, located in Beaverton, District 17, represented by Senator Steiner Hayward. Thank you for your strong, longtime advocacy and support. I had an opportunity to catch a few of the public hearings and saw firsthand that the committee has been well briefed on the child welfare crisis before us. So I'll try not to cover some of the ground that I've already witnessed. I appreciate the opportunity to share with you a little bit about the treatment needs of the boys at St. Mary's, as well as our collaboration with the Department of Human Services and addressing our current capacity crisis. I mentioned in the Public Safety Subcommittee last month a little bit about the ACEs study, so I'll try to be exceedingly brief. There's a strong graded correlation between four or more childhood traumatic events and essentially early death. Our boys average a 6.1 with a MODE of 8. They have average of 8 prior placements. They tend to be aggressive and emotionally dysregulated. The acuity of their treatment needs is quite pronounced. In December of 2015, as part of the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs, the Department of Human Services, Oregon Health Authority, and the Oregon Youth Authority, we completed a comprehensive review of the behavioral rehabilitation system. From that 18 months of work was a plan to resource and address developmentally appropriate, culturally sensitive, gender responsive, and trauma-informed service array. In summation, I'd like to say that Director Psyche and Deputy Director Richardson have demonstrated unprecedented provider engagement and collaboration. In the last year, they have authentically addressed systemic challenges to such a degree than more I've experienced in the previous decade. I believe you have the leadership team in place. They have the strategic plan, and I would encourage and ask you to support the resourcing of those initiatives so we can begin to essentially stop the hemorrhaging of the capacity issues and begin to ameliorate some of those root causes before us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Ahrens.
Good morning. My name is Janet Ahrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs, and I'm just going to touch on the edges of what Frances said to reinforce some of the data points she gave you on the ACEs scores. Of those, all the children who are in the BRS system, the Behavioral Rehabilitation Service System, who have scores of 4 or more, that's 74%, particularly for kids who are in therapeutic foster care, where DHS just informed us that our capacity is down to 50% as of last month, that 83% of those children have scores of 4 or more. And their average is the highest, and that's a score of 8. And 6.1% for generally for the kids who are in BRS, very consistent with what we're doing at St. Mary's. So the most important piece of information here is that the three state agencies, CCOs, kids, advocacy organizations, and providers, we've got together for 16 months, 2 meetings a month, to take a look at appropriate program standards, access to be able to get into programs, right kid, right place, right time, and the methodology and the rates, which came up with the number that Frances was talking about, the 30% gap. Very, very important group of people who did some really wonderful work, and we're hoping that we can take a look at some of the other recommendations around program standards and access with those with some really good ideas. But right now, the critical foundational point is the rate gap. The state agencies submitted to DAS, the governor put it in her recommended budget, and so there'll be opportunity to be able to consider that from their perspective as well as from ours.
Thank you so much. Good. Thank you for coming today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up, we have Doug Riggs, Brittany Hope, and Matt Newell-Ching. And is there, unless there's anybody else, Mr. Mullen, you're standing over by the list. Is anybody else signed up over there?
No.
Good. Well, then I'm going to put out an open invitation for anybody who wants to add anything to feel free to do so after this panel. Please.
Come in. Oh, okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Director Doug Riggs. I'm here on behalf of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon, which is an advocacy organization that's been in the building for more than 25 years, founded many years ago by John Mullins, who we're privileged to have still in the building today. I want to give you a sense in the second page of my testimony that HISCO is asking that the subcommittee consider programs that meet three criteria. I know you've got a very difficult budget situation. First is that there are budget cost savers downstream, and many of these programs are. The second is that we're asking that programs that leverage federal foundation or private support be considered, and many of them are. And third is that they're essential for the lives and safety of Oregonians. And today in child welfare, I just want to highlight and emphasize some of the testimony you just heard and hopefully some more that you'll hear. We have many of my members unable to be here today from the Alliance of Children's Programs, but they've submitted written testimony on OLAS. And I do want to point out and emphasize what Janet and Frances just testified to, which is child safety is really about having quality people to be able to be interacting with those kids on a daily basis. We're talking about kids with high levels of trauma, high ACEs scores, and being able to keep quality, qualified staff over a long period of time in the nonprofits that deal with these kids is absolutely essential. I think it's fundamentally the most important thing. So on the rate request that you're seeing from the governor's office, rates are not rates. Rates are staff. Rates are people. The rates are passed directly through my nonprofits, matched with private money to be able to afford and keep quality people in the system. One data point is that we've lost in the last 19 months, I believe, 23 programs that have decided to turn back their contracts or not renew their contracts. We have three more that have had programs reversed or terminated by the department. So that's a total of 26 programs that served children two, three, 4 years ago that are no longer available. So the budget is a critical element, probably the most important element of being able to rebuild this capacity. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Morning, Co-Chair Senator Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. Thank you for having me here this morning. For the record, my name is Brittany Hope, and I've been a foster youth in the state of Oregon for the last 5 years. And I'm here today as an advocate with the Oregon Foster Youth Connection. Full disclosure, I'm also a staff member in the building. I'm a legislative aide for Senator Sarah Gelser. I'm here today on my own accord as an independent citizen, and she and I have intentionally not discussed what we'll be saying today. In my years in care, I've experienced severe instability in nearly every aspect of my life. In the last 2 years, I've had five caseworkers and at times no caseworker due to high turnover and vacancies in casework positions in my county. I have had my caseworker that I have now for 3 months, and when I met him for our last visit, he didn't even recognize me. Not only does he not know my case history, my values, goals, or the events that are transpiring in my life, he doesn't know who I am as a youth with needs or a person. This is not at all specific to my worker because our caseworkers' unfamiliarity with their youth. Caseworkers are often unsuccessful in getting the things that we need and that ideally would be provided by our parents. This person is supposed to be my sole connection to the system that is charged with caring for me, and he does not know my needs. So how can he or the system behind him properly support me so that I can become a happy, healthy, and independent adult? This is what heavy caseloads and high turnover for caseworkers mean for the children of our state. While I was a minor and in care of the state, I spent two periods of time homeless, the first for 6 months and the second for 5 months. Just recently, while still in the care of the system and considered a child with very low needs, I spent 6 more months homeless, waiting for a placement. The truth is that the lack of homes, not only placements, but homes for our children, it's not only affecting our mental health, our education, and our general well-being, but it's causing us severe instability, insecurity, and even homelessness. I understand that these are tough budget times, and as you write the budget this year, you'll hear from business owners, adults with stable homes and lives and families. Currently, the foster youth of our state do not have stable homes to return to, and our lives are chaotic and often at times near unbearable. The state is my parent, and I and the other 7,500 foster children behind me that couldn't make it here today rely on you, the legislature, to make the Department of Human Services a priority so that they can create for us the stability that every person and every child needs. Please keep my testimony here and the well-being of your state's children in mind when you construct our state's biennial budget. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your willingness to come and talk with us and for your service to our esteemed colleague. Really appreciate it. Mr. Noel Chang.
Thank you, Chair Steiner Hayward and the members of the committee. For the record, Matt Newell Ching, I'm the Public Affairs Director with Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon. We envision an Oregon that is healthy, hunger-free, and thriving. I think what I have submitted testimony for the record. I think what I say today will pale in comparison to the really powerful testimony that we've heard from Oregonians. Brittany just mentioned the budget shortfall, and I know in many conversations I've had with members directly and your staff that's an important topic right now that Oregon faces. I think this hearing today puts a fine point on the budget shortfall that households face, and that's the budget shortfall between the income that families earn and the human needs, the basic human needs like food, shelter, childcare, just getting by. And as you craft budgets, I don't envy some of the choices that you have to make this year. As you make those choices in looking at your budget shortfalls, I urge you to keep in mind the budget shortfalls that households across Oregon are facing, the shortfall that they face when they see a rent increase, but they don't see their income increase in kind, the shortfall that they see because childcare is as expensive as college tuition in many cases. Kids need, when parents go to work, kids need a safe, affordable place to go. And so I urge you that, you know, just in closing, budgets are moral documents. I don't think there's any other document that comes out of these buildings that reflects more clearly the moral priorities of our state. And this is a time 1 in 6 Oregonians are facing food insecurity. That means that households are facing a shortfall between their basic income and food. So I want you to keep that budget shortfall in mind. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And Ms. Hope, I just want to say also, I'm particularly grateful to you for coming, because historically at these hearings, we've had significant representation from current and former foster youth and from foster parents. And today, you're it. And that means your testimony is even more important than it would have been, because you're representing a huge population in Oregon whose voices need to be heard. So thank you for your courage, and thank you for your service to a community of altogether two voiceless people. So thank you very much. And I'm just going to put on the record publicly that if there are people listening out in the world who want to submit written testimony to add to this conversation, we would welcome it. You can email it to jwmhs.exhibits@oregonlegislature.gov, and we do read what comes in, and it's important to us. So I hope that more people will submit their thoughts. Thank you all very much. We do not at the moment have anybody else signed up to testify. Is there anybody else who would like to add anything to our conversation today? Senator Gelser? Anything else? Mr. Mullen? Come on up and while Senator Gelser says something. Mr. Mullen?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to build on what you had just said. This obviously is one of the most critical areas of our budget. Self-sufficiency kind of underpins all of the DHS services to be able to keep people healthy and safe at home and keep families together. And child welfare, as we've discussed, is facing some of the biggest challenges, both the youth in the system, as Brittany described, and the workers in the system, as the caseworker described when she spoke earlier. And the reason there aren't more people here is that they can't be. And I think it's really important to realize the challenges that people have to come, and to know that the numbers of people actually speaks to the depth of the need and how thin people are spread, and really the privilege that it is for those that are able to come to the building. And we just need to remember those that are not able to come.
Completely agree. Mr. Mullen, welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. Again, for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. I just want to point to what I believe is on OLIS, our position paper from the TANF Alliance, and just make a couple of additional points that you haven't heard today. One thing is that we all understand the challenges that you're facing with balancing the budget, but we have a particular concern about time limits and want you to really carefully consider not making any changes to time limits. There are people already getting caught up in the 5-year lifetime limit, and to further reduce the amount of months a family could be on TANF would be really problematic. When we talked about, mentioned briefly about the increasing the grant amount. I remember back when I was working in Clackamas County in the 80s and somebody was on AFDC, they could actually rent an apartment. And that is obviously not true these days. It comes nowhere near to being able to pay for that. The cultural responsive issue that we talk about in our paper, one of the things that I don't think got mentioned is that we are working with a Meyer Memorial Grant, and some of the communities of color, organizations that have been involved, and people in the building today, we really want to understand and hear the voices of people and talk about how the programs are serving their needs. So we also help to learn from them, but also help to give people a voice. So in conclusion, I would just say that, again, you know, underscore what everybody has said here today. There are a lot of issues in this segment of the budget to be considered. The health and safety of families are really important to advocates. And once again, I just wish you the best with all of the deliberation that you have ahead of you. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, particularly if you have questions about the TANF history, but I put a little bit of that into my testimony because I think we're at an important crossroads these days.
Coach Rangel.
And I think I just want to underscore the points that have been made here, that all of these programs are very, very important and very personal to many, many people across this state. But I also want to put a little perspective on the task and the difficulties that both my co-chair and I have had. When the big co-chairs of the full Ways and Means come down and say you need to manage to 8% growth, which is a cut of $285 million of general fund, and then what is the impact of that in the community when you factor in, you know, the federal funds, the total funds? I mean, it's astronomical. There is nothing but false choices in making these types of cuts. Cutting to $285 million, I think both the co-chair and myself would agree, is quite frankly unconscionable in a lot of the ways that it's going to impact people in this state. It's not right. It's not fair. Even if we have new revenue, we are still going to have to make cuts. And so as everyone here, I think a lot of people are feeling very similar. I think all of us here who are like really looking at these cuts personally, I think the conversation has to turn to revenue and that we need more revenue in this state so that we can protect some of the most vulnerable people in this state, because I don't see how any of us can vote for budgets where we're cutting $285 million from some of the most vulnerable people in Oregon.
I really very much appreciate those comments, and you should know that Advocates, the Human Services Coalition was mentioned, were actively engaged in the discussion about revenue. And also, when we think about places to cut, we're also interested for the legislature to look at tax expenditures. I'm able to benefit from that when I just did my taxes and worked with my accountant, and I benefit from all those. But in the back of my mind, I'm worried about the choices that could be made here to cut people that are really vulnerable and low income, and for people like myself who could sacrifice a little bit more to make sure that people are served.
Thank you, Mr. Mullen. And just to add on to what my co-chair said, Mr. Riggs, your points are well taken, and these are exactly the kinds of questions that we're asking. Some of you who've been listening to the hearings of this committee over the course of this year will know that we have spent a lot of time asking for evidence of outcomes, asking for return on investment for the state dollars, and we will be prioritizing programs where we can demonstrate that when the state makes an investment, it helps Oregonians move towards self-sufficiency and towards a more stable life so that they aren't dependent on safety net services. We believe firmly that people don't want to get these services, but they have to, and we have to be sure that we're doing them in the right way to get them off. So, thank you. Any other comments for the good of the order? Representative Hayden, Bueller, Malmstrom, anybody? Senator Gelser, anything else? We good? All right, Ms. Byerly, any other business for the committee?
Not
what's
today.
Up tomorrow?
Back tomorrow, Department of Human Services, talk about some of their central programs.
Okay, very good. We will be back here tomorrow morning at 8:30. Thank you so much. We're adjourned.